Osho, Tao, the Three Treasures, Volume 3, Talks on Fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse Number 7.
Bhagwan, on difficult and easy, Lao Tzu says, accomplish do nothing, attend to no affairs, taste the flavorless. Whether it is big or small, many or few, requite hatred with virtue. Deal with the difficult while yet it is easy. Deal with the big while yet it is small. The difficult problems of the world must be dealt with while they are yet easy. The great problems of the world must be dealt with while they are yet small. Therefore, the sage, by never dealing with great problems, accomplishes greatness. He who lightly makes a promise will find it often hard to keep his faith. He who makes light of many things will encounter many difficulties. Hence, even the sage regards things as difficult, and for that reason never meets with difficulties.
Life is not a problem. Rather, it is a mystery to be lived, not a problem to be solved. But it becomes a problem. And it becomes a problem because you go on postponing things, postponing them for tomorrow. That which can be done today, that which should be done today, cannot be done tomorrow. That which would have been a beautiful phenomenon today, a mystery to be lived, tomorrow will become a very, very hard and cold problem to be solved. Life in itself, if lived here and now, is not a problem. Postponement creates problems. And then you go on piling up. Then so much gathers around you that it becomes almost impossible to live. You are paralyzed, crippled, in a straitjacket, imprisoned. First try to understand this. Then it will be easy to enter into the sutra. I was talking just a few days before that even a genius, a very talented person, maybe a Nobel Prize winner, a great intellectual, world known, but behaves in a childish way. If he finds in the morning, when he wakes, that his sleepers are not in the right place, he is angry, irritated. If he could pay attention to his anger that very moment, he would laugh, because this is so foolish, ridiculous. But he does not pay attention to it. He goes to the bath, irritated, in a bad mood. He starts shaving his beard. But he is almost unconscious that a problem has not been dealt. A problem is there, poking its nose again and again into his being. And it is growing all the time. Because in life nothing is non-growing. Everything alive is growing. And when you are alive, your anger is alive. It grows. It never remains the same. Moment to moment it is gathering more momentum and force. He goes on saving but irritated. He is not enjoying the fact, the freshness of it, the beautiful moment when one feels unburdened. No, he is not in an enjoying mood. Unconscious, the razor slips from his hand, falls to the floor. Now he is even more angry. If he can deal it right now, he will laugh. It is foolish to be angry because a razor is not a being. A razor is never responsible for anything. How you can be angry at a razor? Now he is more irritated. His hands are moving now more foolishly, unconsciously. It again slips. It strikes the old, ancient, antique mirror, which he loves very much. The mirror is broken. Now, he is no more sane. He comes out, bumps on the furniture, slams the door, slaps the child because he has not done the homework. He starts arguing, becomes quarrelsome with the wife, and only for a small thing, which was nothing, because the sleepers were not found in the right place. Now our so-called genius takes his car and goes to the office, but never reaches because there is accident. It was going to be so, and just for the sleepers, because they were not found in the right place. Now he drives like a maniac. His whole anger comes to his feet. He goes on pressing the accelerator. He's drunkard, drunk with his anger. There is an accident. After 12 hours or 15 hours, when he opens his eyes, he is in a hospital. And he will never be able to relate the whole thing. And the story can go on and on. He falls in love with the nurse, and you can go on. Just for the sleepers, not found in the right place. The whole family disturbed, divorce. And the whole world will not be the same again. Just because the sleepers were not found in the right place. Deal with things moment to moment. Don't let them pile up within you. Don't accumulate. Life is really beautiful. It becomes ugly. It is not a problem. Every problem is so small that it is foolish to call that life is a problem. It is not a problem for the trees. It is not a problem for the birds. It is not a problem for the earth, for the sky. It is only a problem for man, because only man has learned a trick, the trick of postponement. Then small things become bigger. Then a moment comes when you cannot cope with them. Then you become so small and the problem is so big. It is almost impossible to cope with it. Then you always carry the burden on your head. And with that much burden, how can you enjoy? How can you be delighted? How can you celebrate? How can you dance? And then somebody says, there is God. You hear the word, but you cannot believe. Maybe there is a devil who is running the whole world, but not a God. Because your life has become so crippled, so paralyzed, so burdensome, you would like to commit suicide. It is rare to find a man who has not contemplated some time or other to commit suicide. Psychoanalysts say that each man, each woman, in the long run of life, thinks almost 10 times to commit suicide. You don't commit because you are cowards. There is nothing in it to take credit that you don't commit. You contemplate. That's enough. That means life has become so unlivable that rather being dragged more and more into it, you would like to drop. You would like to become a dropout. How can you love God? How can you pray? Because prayer comes out of gratitude. Prayer comes out of gratefulness. A life lived well becomes a life of prayer. It has nothing to do with churches and temples and mosques. It has to do something with the quality of your life. Life lived well, moment to moment, aware, alert, not postponed, becomes a prayerful life. And prayer by and by turns into meditation. Then you even don't pray because the words disturb. Then your prayer becomes silent. When prayer is silent, it is meditation. So to understand that existence is beautiful, sacred, that existence is a benediction, a blessing, you will have to live a different type of life, a life which is not of postponement. This is the meaning of living moment to moment. Unburden yourself from the past. It is no more there. It has already flown away. It exists not. You are unnecessarily burdened by ghosts. They are no more. And don't burden yourself with the future. It is not yet. When it comes, you will be there to meet it. Why plan about it right now? Because the way you are going to plan, it is never going to happen. Your planning is bound to be a greater problem. Because when you plan beforehand, your plan you want to impose on existence. Existence is not to follow you. You can follow existence and feel graceful. But the existence cannot follow you. You don't know the whole. You don't know the desire of the whole, the destiny of the whole. And you make private plans. They are bound to be against the whole. And they are bound to be broken. Then your heart is broken. Drop the past. And don't bring the future in. This moment is all. If you live this moment alert, then things, small things, will be dealt. And those small things dealt, you will grow. And there will be no great problems. Lao Tzu says that for a great man there are no great problems. Ordinarily you must be thinking the other way round, that great men exist because they tackle great problems. And Lao Tzu says there are no great problems for a great man because he never allows the problems to become great. He always deals them when they are small. within his hands, something can be done. And when you deal with a problem moment to moment, you are always fresh, unburdened. Dust never collects on your being. Next moment you slip, fresh, young, virgin. You slip into the next moment as a snake slips out of his old skin. Left behind comes the fresh and the younger skin. Then life is a mystery. It is not a problem to be solved. Then it has to be lived and lived totally. Then you feel grateful. Then it has been a blessing. Remember this and then try to understand Lao Tzu's sutras. Accomplish, do nothing. Attend to no affairs. Taste the flavorless. Inaction, do nothing, is the most deepest secret of Lao Tzu. He says, when things can be done by non-doing, why you bother to do? When things can be done by non-doing, if you try to do, you will create only troubles for you. Let me tell you a few examples. You must have heard the name of Archimedes. His story is famous. He was trying to solve a scientific problem. Tried hard, tried his best, couldn't sleep, couldn't do anything else. The king has given him a problem to be solved, and it has to be solved immediately. And he was the first man to tackle the problem. So there is no precedent, no history, nothing in the past which can be of any help. The problem has never been raised. It was for the first time. He worked hard, became tense as one can be. Then what you can do if you cannot solve? You cannot solve. One feels helpless. He felt the helplessness. One day, while he was taking his bath, lying in the bath, relaxed, and he has dropped the idea of solving the problem. It cannot be solved. Suddenly, it is solved. And he becomes so ecstatic that he forgot that he is naked in his bath. He ran into the streets, crying loud, "Eureka! Eureka!" Eureka means, "I have found it! I have found it!" The king thought that he has gone mad. The whole town thought that he has gone mad. He has not gone mad. He has found the solution. And when the king asks how, he says, by non-doing. I was not doing anything. I was not even trying to solve it. In fact, I had dropped. I have stopped completely all activity about it. I was relaxing. What happened then? When you relax, you become one with the whole. When you relax, you are no more the ego. When you relax, you are no more the individual. When you relax, you become the whole. When you are tense, you become individual. The more you are tense, the more you are a concentrated ego. Ego is very small. How it can solve anything? It can fuss around, but it cannot solve anything. When the ego is not there, relaxing in a tub bath, suddenly the problem is solved. It happened to Buddha. For 6 years he was doing, and doing really too much. Nobody has been in search of the innermost meaning of life as deeply as Gautam Buddha. For 6 years he did whatsoever could be done, whatsoever is humanly possible. He went to teachers, all known teachers of those days, and the teachers became helpless, because whatsoever they said, Buddha did, and did so perfectly that they couldn't say that you are not doing enough, that's why you are not achieving. He was doing so well, better than his own masters. They said, no, forgive us, you go somewhere else. It is not happening, and we cannot help you in any way anymore. You find some other teacher. Then he was fed up with all teachers, fed up with all systems, philosophies, fed up with all techniques, methods. He started doing things on his own, but then too nothing happened. 6 years passed, 6 years of a nightmarish existence. He lived in deepest anguish. Then one day, while passing the river Niranjana near Bodh Gaya, he had become so weak because of a long fast. Somebody has suggested that do a long fast, that will help. He had become so weak he couldn't cross the river. The river Niranjana is not a very big river. But he was really weak. He remained clinging to the roots of a tree, otherwise the current would have taken him. There, clinging to the roots of a tree, he started thinking, what have I been doing? I have simply destroyed myself. I have reached nowhere. The world is finished that I have left behind. Now this moksha, salvation, God, truth, whatsoever you call it, that too is finished. I don't care. I dropped that too. That moment he became unburdened. When you search and seek, there is a tension. That very tension becomes the barrier. When there was no search, no seeking, everything relaxed. The same happened in River Niranjana as it had happened to Archimedes in his tub bath. He was relaxed. And when he was relaxed, he felt an upsurge of energy. Now this energy is not his. This energy is of the whole. He is no more there. You exist because of your seeking, greed, desire. When there is no greed, no desire, nothing to be attained, this moment enough and unto itself, then you are not. The ego disappears. Then he went out, relaxed under the Bodhi tree. For years he had not relaxed. That night he slept perfectly well. For the first night really he slept without any dreams, because dreams are part of desires. In the day you dream, inside in your thinking, the daydreaming continues. Desires, 1001 desires, unfulfilled, they create in the night some consolations for the mind. That which has not been fulfilled in the day is fulfilled in the dream. Dreams are consolations. But when you are not desiring, dreams disappear. And when dreams disappear, for the first time you sleep. For the first time you are so relaxed, you disappear into the whole. He slept well. For the first time he slept really. early in the morning, when the last star was going to disappear, he opened his eyes, fresh as a newly born child, with no attitude, no mind to look, no desire. What Buddha calls no trishna, no desire. That moment was eternity. Because when you desire, you are always moving into the future. That moment was eternity. No movement in the future. That moment was all. That time, Buddha became like a flower. A flower flowers here and now. A bird sings here and now. A man thinks always somewhere else. Goes moving in the mind somewhere else. A man is never where he is. You can find him anywhere else, but you cannot find him where he is. Never. Buddha at that time was really in that moment under the Bodhi tree. Physically he was there, mentally he was there, spiritually he was there. That's why that tree became the tree of enlightenment. Not a single thought, not a ripple in the lake of his consciousness. Everything silent, no desire disturbing, no turmoil. He looked at the last disappearing star and he became enlightened. And when people used to ask later on how you attained, he said, when I stopped searching, seeking, when I stopped being active, then in deep inaction it happened. It always happens so. Sometimes you may have also observed, not Buddha-like, not like Archimedes, but sometimes you try to remember a name. It is just on the tongue. You say it is just on the tongue, and it is not coming, and you feel very suffocated and very tense. But what can you do if it is not coming? It is not coming. The more you try, the more it seems impossible. Then you drop. Then you take a cigarette and you smoke. Or you go outside in the garden for a small walk. You just engage yourself somewhere else. You put on the radio. Or you sip tea. Or do something else and forget about it. And suddenly it pops up. It is there. A very small enlightenment, but it is of the same quality. A very, very small satori. Very tiny. Nothing much to brag about. But the nature, if you can understand the process, you have understood what Lao Tzu means by inaction. There are things you cannot attain by action. This is the criterion. If there is something which you can attain by action, that belongs to this world. Anything that can be attained by action belongs to the world of matter. And anything that belongs to the world of spirit cannot be attained by action. That can be attained only through inaction, relaxation, total let go. Accomplice do nothing. Accomplice total let go. Accomplice relaxation. Relax in your search of truth. When you come to seek truth, you come with the worldly mind. There ambition is needed. Effort is needed. Because the competition is very hard. You are not alone there. Millions of people struggling, fighting with each other. A constant war goes on. The world is a constant war. And everybody is fighting with everybody else. The son fighting with the father may not be aware. The father fighting with the son may not be aware. The mother fighting with the child. The child fighting with the mother. Brothers fighting brothers. Nations fighting nations. Families fighting other families. Everybody is in a deep conflict and fight. There, if you relax, then you cannot become a prime minister. There, if you relax, then you cannot become a president of a country. There, if you relax, you cannot become a Rockefeller or a Ford. No, that's not possible. If there you relax, you will be a beggar like Buddha or Lao Tzu. There, fight is needed. The world belongs to violence. And the world belongs to the egos. And the world belongs to those who are more aggressive than others. You come from the world trained completely for violence, action, do something. People come to me and they say, "That tell us to do and we can do." But you say that just relax, don't do. That is impossible. Even for a single moment, not to do anything seems impossible because of old habit, a old deep-rooted pattern. Do something. Lao Tzu says, do nothing. In the world of being, doing is not needed. That is the meaning of being, where doing is not needed. There you flower in your profoundest depth. There you flower in your greatest height. But no effort is needed. Says a Zen master, sitting quietly, doing nothing, and the grass grows by itself. He's talking about the innermost core of your being, where doing nothing, sitting quietly, is the only way to do something. The grass grows by itself. There is no need to pull the grass. There is no need to pull the plants up. They grow by themselves. You simply wait by the side. While you are waiting, the grass is growing. Once you understand that no effort is needed for the innermost being, suddenly a new dimension has opened for you. There is no strain. A religious man is without strain. In fact, a religious man is not trying to achieve anything. If you see that the religious man is trying to achieve something, he is not religious. He is as worldly as others. He has only changed the name of his God, that's all. Before he used to call it money, now he calls it meditation. Before he used to call it matter, now he calls it something else, God. But the achieving mind is there. And achieving mind is the hindrance, the only barrier. Accomplice, do nothing. Enjoy not doing anything. Simple, but it looks difficult. It looks difficult because of you, otherwise it is simple. Find time to do nothing. Whenever you can find something, some time, just close your eyes and do nothing. Soon, you will have the taste of the flavorless. Soon you will enter into a different kind of existence. Where Jesus lives, Krishna lives, Lao Tzu lives. Accomplice, do nothing. Attend to no affairs. constantly attending to affairs creates anxiety. Sometimes attend to no affairs, not doing anything. In my childhood, my grandfather was very much worried about me. He was a very loving man and very clever. Old and wise. Whenever he will see me sitting, because that's why my whole childhood I was doing nothing, just sitting silently, he will say, "Get up, do something. Otherwise you will not accomplish anything in life. You will be a failure." And he was right. Perfectly right. Out of deep compassion he was saying that. He will say, "At least go and play. Don't sit like that. You create anxiety for me." So I will move from that room to another and sit there. Because once you taste the flavorless, then nothing to compare with it. It is incomparable. Once you know that attending to no affairs is the greatest affair in the world, then all things seem to be so small, so juvenile, childish, foolish. But in the West particularly, there has never been a teacher who has said, "Do nothing." Jesus tried, but they killed him. And Jesus also tried very guardedly, because he would not have been understood at all. If he had talked like Lao Tzu, nobody would have understood him. Jews are great doers. They accomplish many things. It is difficult to defeat Jews in anything. Never compete with a Jew. He will defeat you. They are great doers. The whole world has been against them. Many Hitlers come and go. They try to kill, they try to destroy Jews, but nothing. They again are standing again stronger than before. Jews are the most worldly race in the world. They believe in doing. They would not have understood Jesus, but he was talking something like Lao Tzu, in a guarded way, in a masked language. But no other teacher has even tried. On the contrary, the proverb goes that when you do nothing, you become a workshop for the devil. And Lao Tzu says, when you do nothing, then only you become the workshop for God, not for devil. Devil takes possession of you when you want to do something. Then you are in the hand of the devil. Then he can possess you. He can tempt you. He can force you. He can make you run towards things, towards achievements. But a man who does not want to do anything, pays attention to no affairs, devil simply cannot come near him. Because devil is the doer. I would like to tell you again, from a different standpoint, the story why Adam was expelled from the Garden of Eden, from paradise. Adam lived a life like animals, trees and birds, doing nothing. It was sheer delight, enjoying, as children do. Doing nothing they enjoy. Playing, And God has said that don't go and eat the fruit of the tree of knowledge. Because the moment you eat the fruit of knowledge, immediately you become a doer. Because knowledge is useless unless it functions as a means to do something. Knowledge means know-how. Knowledge means it is a technical help to do things more skillfully. Knowledge makes you more efficient doers. But the serpent, the devil, seduced. First he seduced Eve. That too is meaningful. Because wherever you go, you will always find Eves pushing their husbands toward doing something. Go and do something. We have to make a bigger house and purchase a bigger car. And more diamonds are needed. Go and do something. Don't sit in the house. Women go and pushing their husbands. The parable is meaningful. If man is allowed, he will relax. He will become a bum. He will just relax. He will just play on the flute under a tree. Will have a flask of wine around him. And that will do. He will not bother about the world. The parable says, the serpent first convinced Eve that this tree, the tree of knowledge, has been prohibited because God does not want you to become like God. If you eat the fruit of knowledge, you will be like gods. All advertisers appeal to women, not to men. The serpent was the first advertising agency. He was the pioneer. He approached the right source. If you want to catch the husband, catch the wife. If once a new car enters in her mind, then it is difficult. She is going to put the new car in the husband's mind. And once she tasted the fruit of knowledge, she seduced poor Adam also. They were expelled. They were thrown out of paradise. The meaning is that after that they became so cunning, knowing, doers, they lost the innocence of being. They used to delight in, there was no time before. The parable says God, when he was expelling them, said to them, now there will be death for you. There was no time before, so death could not exist. Not that Adam was not going to die, but death could not exist. Birds die, but they don't know anything about death. They simply live and they simply die. Not for a single moment they are worried about death. Animals live and die, but death is not a problem to them. They don't sit and brood about what is death and whether one survives after death or not. Death is not a problem. When time enters, death enters. Knowledge enters, comes in time, then comes in death, and the whole problems. Man has to become innocent again. He has to drop knowledge. But you can drop knowledge only when you come to know that all that is beautiful, true and good can happen without doing. Otherwise, you will not be able to drop knowledge. Lao Tzu is trying to make you understanding. He is trying to give you a vision that knowledge has to be dropped. But then you will immediately ask, if knowledge is dropped, then how we will be able to do so many things? He says, those so many things are not needed. The innermost being can flower in non-doing. Accomplice, do nothing. Attend to no affairs. Taste the flavorless. Lao Tzu never uses the name God. He consistently remains with indications. He never uses any direct expression. The flavorless. God has no flavor. Because flavor can exist only in dualities. If something is sweet, then something has to be bitter. If something is good, then something else has to be bad. If something is divine, then something has to be evil. Flavorless means the non-dual, what Hindus call Advait, not two. Flavorless is a poetic expression. Just gives a hint, not a direct instruction. Whether it is big or small, many or few, requite hatred with virtue. This is a very revolutionary concept. Has to be understood very, very delicately. You have heard the famous dictum of Jesus that love your enemies. Lao Tzu goes deeper than that. He says, requite hatred with virtue, not with love. It would have been easier to say, respond with love when somebody hates you. Love the enemy. But why he is not saying love? There are very profound reasons. First, when Jesus says love the enemy, he is accepting the duality of love and hate. He accepts the dual phenomena. And deep down, you already love your enemy, otherwise how you can hate? Unless you have loved the enemy, you cannot hate him. You love the enemy already in your deep unconscious. That's why you hate. Love and hate exist together. When you love a person, you forget that you hate him also. If you become aware, you will become aware of the fact that you love a person and you hate him also. And you hate a person and you love him also. Enemies and friends are not very different. You love the friend consciously, you hate him unconsciously. You hate the enemy consciously, you love him unconsciously. Because they cannot exist separately. They are two aspects of the same coin, love and hate. Sometimes you become worried that why do you want to kill? Sometimes you start thinking of killing your wife or your husband or murdering your mother or your father. And you feel very much guilt. Why? Don't feel guilty. It is natural. In each love, hate is hidden. And think about your enemy. Go deeper into your hatred. You will find that you love him. Maybe it is a negative way of loving. Hate is a negative way of loving. It happened just few days before. Mahatma Gandhi and Muhammad Ali Jinnah, two great politicians of India, were long-standing enemies. And of course, when you are enemies for so long, you become too much attached to each other. Gandhi was murdered. Jinnah heard the news. The man who brought the news to Jinnah was thinking that he will be happy, but he became sad. Because without Gandhi, where Jinnah would be? The enemy is dead, you are almost dead. You don't miss your friends only, you miss your enemies also. They have become part of your being. When Jesus says love your enemies, he is not saying a very, very revolutionary thing. It appears revolutionary. You already love, in fact. The love is hidden. He wants to bring it up, that's all. Lao Tzu says, requite hatred with virtue. What is virtue? Virtue is balance. Virtue is compassion, not love. The distinction is subtle, but great. When you love a person, the emotion is hot. When you hate a person, then too the emotion is hot. One thing is the same, that you are in a hot relationship. If you are indifferent to a person, you are cold. No heat in you. Either way, you simply are unrelated. You don't love, you don't hate. You don't bother, you don't care. You are indifferent, you go on your own way. That's why nothing hurts people more than indifference. If you hate a person, it is not so much a problem. He knows you are paying attention. Maybe negative, but you are paying attention. But if you are indifferent, it hurts very deeply. If people simply does not bother about you, you pass and they don't pay any attention, this way or that, then you are feel that you are almost dead. Indifference kills, not hate. Hate brings energy. Love brings energy. Love is a pleasant feeling. Hate is unpleasant. But if you have to choose between hate and indifference, you will certainly choose hate. You will never choose indifference. Indifference is absolutely cold, killing. Compassion is not cold. Compassion is cool. Cold means dead. Cool means balanced. Let me tell you in another way. Compassion is cool. Indifference is cold. If you compare compassion with love and hate, it is cool. If you compare compassion with indifference, it is warm. It is warm in comparison to indifference and its coldness. It is cool in comparison to love and hate and their heat. Virtue is compassion. It is not love. It is not hate. It is a balance between the two. It is not indifference either. It is life-giving. But if you don't know, compassion will look like indifference. The distinction is very subtle. Coolness will look like coldness. But coolness is alive, fresh. Coldness is simply dead. Virtue is compassion. Requite hatred with compassion. Deal with the difficult while it is easy. Everything difficult has a phase when it is easy. If you are alert, you will know. It is so easy to destroy a seed. It is very difficult to destroy a big tree. And everything has a seed form. When anger arises, it is just like a seed. If you want to drop it at that moment, there is no problem. But if you allow it to take roots within you, to spread within your being, to overwhelm you, then destroying anger will be very, very difficult. It will look like destroying yourself. It would have become such a deep part of you. Whether it is big or small, many or few, requite hatred with virtue, deal with the difficult while yet it is easy. And deal with the big while yet it is small. And everything is small and easy in the present. If you don't postpone, everything is easy and small. You are enough powerful to change it, to transform it. But if you say, I will see tomorrow, you say, there is no hurry. If you take it easy and you say, someday, when I have enough time, I will see to the problem. Meanwhile, the problem is growing and taking roots. Don't postpone it. Then you will not be able to do much about it. That's what you have done up to now. You have been postponing for lives. And then you come to me and you say, we would like to be silent. We would like to be peaceful. And for many lives, you have been postponing problems which are boiling within you. They have to be tackled. A great surgery is needed. And you are in such a hurry again. Few days people meditate, 4 or 5 days. And they come to me and they say, nothing is happening yet. Can't you see the ridiculousness of it? What you are asking? For many lives you postpone. Then your being becomes like a ruin. Your garden is no more there. Everything destroyed. Only weeds subsist. And suddenly one day you want to have a beautiful lawn. It will take time. The weeds have to be thrown out. Their roots and seeds have to be thrown out. The soil has to be changed. It is not easy now. But you can do at least one thing. You start living moment to moment. So at least you are not gathering more nonsense around you, more rubbish around you. At least you can clean one part of the garden and start working moment to moment. And once you know how problems have become difficult, and once you come to understand that they are easy if you tackle them in the beginning, everything will become easy again. But that feeling, that nuance, that knack has to be learned. The difficult problems of the world must be dealt with while they are yet easy. The great problems of the world must be dealt with while they are yet small. Therefore, the sage, by never dealing with great problems, accomplishes greatness. These things look like paradoxes. They are not. They are simple statements with no contradiction in them. Therefore, the sage, by never dealing with great problems, because he has no great problems, he never deals with great problems. That's why he is great. In your understanding, just the opposite is the case. You think some man is so great because he has dealt with such great problems, so great challenges, and he has conquered them. This is foolish. A great man has nothing to conquer. The greater he is, the less to conquer. If he is really great, there is nothing to conquer. The greatest man has no problems to solve, neither great nor small, because he never allows them to accumulate. They become problems only when postponed. Right now lived, they are not problems. They are part of life and beautiful. Just start being alert. Whenever you see some problem is arising, drop all activity. Look to it. Pay attention to it. Just look within what it is. Sometimes just a smile will be enough to change it. A laughter will do. And you will be out of the vicious circle. Sometimes nothing will be needed, not even a smile and a laughter. Just the very attention that you looked into it, it will disappear. As dew drops disappear in the morning when the sun arises. Just look, bring the sun of consciousness to it. It will disappear. It is so small, and you are so big and so vast. Just the very encounter that you look at it, and it changes its quality. It is no more a problem. You can delight in it. You can enjoy it. Then life becomes a drama. He who lightly makes a promise will find it often hard to keep his faith. If you understand life, you will never make promises. Because promise is a postponement. You will either do it now or you will say, I don't know. I will say tomorrow. In Mahabharata, there is a beautiful anecdote. Pandavas, the five brothers, are hiding in the forest. One day, a beggar comes. Yudhishthira is sitting outside the hut, and the beggar asks, nothing much, just few bread, few chapatis. And Yudhishthira is brooding, and as it happens always, whenever there is a beggar, you would like to postpone. You say, come tomorrow. Just to avoid, he may not come tomorrow again. You don't want to be so rude to say that I will not give. You want to protect your image also that you are a great giver. So you say, come tomorrow. Don't disturb me now. Yudhishthira did the same. He said, come tomorrow. Bhim, his another brother, who is not known much about his wisdom or intelligence. But sometimes it happens that people who are not very intelligent sometimes flare up. He suddenly started laughing. And he ran out of the house with laughter towards the town. Yudhishthira asked, "Where are you going?" He said, "I am going to tell the people in the town that my brother has conquered time. He has promised to a beggar to come tomorrow." Suddenly Yudhishthira became aware. Because how can you say come tomorrow? You may not be here tomorrow. The beggar may not be here tomorrow. Yudhishthira ran away, caught hold of the beggar, gave him whatsoever he could give him, and dropped the habit of promising. Because promise is possible only if tomorrow is certain. Who knows anything about tomorrow? There is a great Chinese old story. A king was very angry against his prime minister. He had done something. So he ordered him to be sentenced to death. It was the tradition that before somebody is to be killed by the king's order, the king has to visit him just before one day to ask if he has some desire to be fulfilled. The last desire of the dying man has to be fulfilled. And this man was no ordinary man. He has served the king for many years as his prime minister. He has been intimate. But something went wrong. He did something and the king was angry. So tomorrow morning he will be killed, hanged. The king came to see him 24 hours before. The prime minister was a brave man. He has been to many wars as a general. When the king came, the prime minister started weeping and crying, tears stalling down. The king said, "I could never imagine that you, a man of such bravery, and you will be weeping and crying because you are going to be hanged tomorrow. Are you afraid of death?" The prime minister said, "That is not the point. Death, I have never been afraid. It is something else, but leave it aside. Now there is no time to do it." The king became curious. He said, "What is the matter? You tell me. And I am here to fulfill your last desire. I promise you to fulfill. You tell me. And you have served the kingdom long. And I would like, whatsoever it is, you just tell me." The prime minister said, "If you insist, then I will tell you. This is a long story. When I was young, I was with a great master. And he was an enlightened being. And he had many secrets with him. One secret I learned. And the secret was that there are few type of horses which can be taught to fly. And my whole life I have been searching for that type of horse who can be taught to fly, but I couldn't get. And look at the irony of fate. The horse that you have come on is the right horse. And tomorrow morning I will be dead. And the whole science will go dead with me. The secret will be lost to humanity. That's why I am crying." The king said, the horse can fly? How much time you will take to teach it?" Because the king became interested. If his horse can fly in the sky, this will be something superb, incomparable. No other king in the world can claim. He said, "You forget about your sentence. You tell me how much time you will take." The man said, "It will take 1 year." King said, "Okay, there is no harm in it. 1 year you try. If the horse flies, then not only you will not be hanged, you will get married to my daughter and you will share my kingdom, half-half. But if the horse cannot fly, then you will be killed. So there is no harm in it. You come out, take the horse." The man took the horse, went home. The wife and children were crying and weeping because this is the last day. Tomorrow morning, the husband, the father will be dead. They could not believe their eyes that he is back riding, coming on a horse. They thought they must be dreaming. They wiped their eyes and they asked, "What is the matter? How you could manage to come?" He said the whole story. The wife again started crying and said that you are a fool, because I know very well you don't know anything like that. You created a lie. If you were going to lie, then why 1 year? You should have asked for 50 years, 20 years at least. The 1 year will pass so soon, and this will be a nightmare, because whole year we will be trembling that now you have to die again. The man said, "Don't be afraid, 1 year is too long. The king can die, I can die, at least the horse can die. You don't be worried. You don't be worried, 1 year is too long." Lao Tzu says, "He who lightly makes a promise will find it often hard to keep his faith. He who makes light of many things will encounter many difficulties." Hence, even the sage regards things as difficult, and for that reason never meets with difficulties. Lao Tzu is saying that don't promise, otherwise you will lose faith, because time goes on changing. Don't say anything certain about the future, because future itself is not certain. At the most, for this moment you can be certain, that's all. And one who lives in this moment without promising, postponing, thinking, planning about the future, lives such a simple life, such an innocent life, that his faith grows, his trust grows, his gratefulness grows, and he becomes a vehicle for the ultimate grace to flow from him. He becomes a passage for the divine, for Tao. But one who lightly gives promises, who lightly postpones things, who never thinks that things are difficult. Try to understand this. Lao Tzu says, everything is simple if you take it rightly in the beginning. But don't think that it is simple, and don't think that it is easy. Because if you think it is easy, there will be a tendency to postpone. Such an easy thing, why bother now? It can be done tomorrow. Things are easy, but think that they are very difficult. Tackle them immediately. Otherwise, they will become difficult. Hence, even the sage regards things as difficult, knowing well that they are easy, but he regards them difficult so that the inner tendency to postponement is curbed. It's small things, very ordinary. They can be done very easily, but the sage regards them difficult, and for that reason never meets with difficulties. Because then he goes on solving everything. Never things accumulate. Never they are too much. He moves from moment to moment, completely unburdened from the past, completely unburdened for the future. He moves like a mirror, empty. The empty mirror is the right word for the sage. You come before it, he mirrors you. When you move, the reflection has gone. the mirror is again empty, again ready to reflect something if it comes. The mirror never says, I will reflect tomorrow. If the mirror could say that I will reflect tomorrow, there will be such a crowd, nothing will be reflected. That is the state of your mind you have been postponing. Now, stop postponing. Look into the problems. By the very look, they are almost solved. And the small things that remain, they can be tackled. Everybody is capable to solve his problems. Everybody has to be capable. When you are capable to create problems, who else is going to be capable to solve them? You create. You can solve. These sutras of Lao Tzu are very significant. Pay attention to them. Meditate over them. Let your being be soaked with them. Enough for today.